Atlas supports a skeletal steel globe on his shoulders. An Anglo-Amalgamated presentation. Fish swim amongst the rocks and coral at the bottom of the dark ocean. Vincent Price, David Tomlinson, Tab Hunter, and Susan Hart in The City Under the Sea. Screenplay by Charles Bennett and Louis M. Hayward, based on Edgar Allan Poe's City in the Sea. Additional dialogue, David Whittaker. Produced by George Willoughby and directed by Jacques Turner. Above the surface, waves froth and foam, crashing against dark cliffs.
Has reared himself a throne in a strange city lying alone far down within the dim west, where the good and the bad and the worst and the best have gone to their eternal rest. Resignedly beneath the sky the melancholy waters lie, but lo, a stir is in the air, the wave, there is a movement there, as if their tops had given death is undivided time.
A body is washed ashore. Fishermen drag it further up the beach. A well-dressed man comes to look.
Body, Mr. Harrison, strangely dressed.
I can see that. Who is it?
Harris rolls the body onto its back. It's a man with a grey beard.
Mr. Penrose!
The lawyer's been advising Miss Tregellis.
Poor devil.
It's the devil's work, right enough.
Be quiet, you old fool.
I told you nothing good had come of this. An American girl at the Manor House, solicitors, and this young man with his rock samples and questions about the old mine workings.
You old bag of wind, he'll hear you.
He has. Now what about the body?
Somebody's got to tell Mr. Gillis.
The fishermen avoid his gaze.
All right, I'll go.
Harris strides off. The night sky is stormy. Waves pound the beach. Set high on the cliff, a large house stands alone. Wind whips at the plants on its porticoed porch. Harris, battling against the wind, steps up to the front door. A butler opens it, carrying a candle.
Mr. Harris, couldn't be you've come to help us about the electricity. The lights be gone out with a storm. Not like the old days. A candle could be depended upon.
I've come to see Mr. Gillis.
You should be here about the lights. The guests are grumbling proper. Come in. I'll take you to her.
Harris steps into the large panelled hall. Two elderly men in dinner jackets are playing chess. An old dowager is reading, another knitting. They stare at the young man, regarding him with cold mistrust. Harris unbuttons his overcoat and hangs it up. The guests return to their silent occupations. A fire burns in the grate. Candles flicker on a number of small tables. Harris turns to the butler.
You wait here. I'll fetch Miss Tregellis.
I'll come along with you.
Mr. Gillis is with one of the guests. An artist, he says he is. Something strange about him. Most that he paints don't look like much. He's brought the beast with him.
The beast?
You'll see. It's in there with them.
Who is it?
It's Mumford, Mum. Mr. Harris is here. He insists on seeing you.
Just a minute.
No, I'm not staying. Last time I waited, the beast got out.
I'm opening the door, but come in quickly. Oh, how nice to see you.
A chicken.
Her name is Herbert.
Her name is Herbert. Jill, I came to talk to you about Mr. Penrose.
Oh, Ben, I'm so disappointed. I thought maybe this was a social call. I mean, we're the only two Americans in the whole village. Don't you think we should be friends? Harold!
Yeah?
Mr. Harris captured Herbert for us.
Harold?
Yes, he's one of our guests. He's an artist. Would you like to meet him?
Oh, yes, I would. Yes, very much.
Well, come on in then and close the door. Harold!
Yes, Jill?
This is Mr. Ben Harris.
How'd you do?
He's up on the bookcase.
How do you do?
And this is Mr. Harold Tufnell Jones.
You're wondering what I'm doing up here, aren't you? I'm not up here all the time. It's just that Herbert's been giving us a bit of a chase. Would you mind helping me down?
Would you mind if I talked with Mr. Gillis about her lawyer?
Well, I'm sure that can wait till I'm down on terra firma. Would you give me a hand?
Well, of course. Thank you.
Harold, dressed in the kilt, climbs onto Ben's shoulders.
About Mr. Penwell.
I'll take you in to see him in a minute. He's been in his study all day.
How'd you do? Thank you very much.
It's quite all right.
Please, will you come with me? There's something I'd like to show you.
Lower to the floor, Harold leads Ben to a painting.
Self-portrait. Do you like it?
It's a good likeness. If anybody would want such a thing.
Well, I'm sure someone will be.
If anyone would want such a thing. I signed it myself, look.
Harold Tufnell Jones, F.R.A. Oh, a fellow of the Royal Academy.
Not actually. Founder of the Roosters Association. Better select.
You say that Mr. Penrose is in his study?
Yes, just across the hall.
Jill, a pretty dark-haired girl in a long blue gown, leads Ben to the door, picks up her candle, and ventures into the dark corridor. She crosses to the room opposite and knocks.
Jill, I've just come up from the beach and... somebody's in there.
Ben opens the door.
Go back to the other room and wait for me. Go on. Go on, please.
A wind whistles through the crack, blowing out Jill's candle. Ben tries the light switch. Nothing happens. In the half-light, a figure darts past the open window. The casement bangs in its frame. Ben looks around bewildered and steps cautiously into the room. The figure leaps up. It hurls something at Ben which smashes the mirror behind him. Ben grabs a shard of glass and throws it. It narrowly misses a sea-green humanoid. The creature hurls a brass candlestick which hits a vase. Pressing a feature on the mantelpiece which opens a secret bookcase door, the creature slips out. Jill comes in.
Ben, are you all right?
Did anyone go out through that door?
No.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Well, should anyone have?
I don't know.
The lights come back on. Harold waits with Jill. Ben goes to the window and stares out at the sea far below. Ben shuts the window.
Where's Mr. Penrose?
Ben turns awkwardly to Jill.
I found his body on the beach. He's dead.
Back on the beach.
We shouldn't leave the body there.
What are you afraid of?
I don't know one man who can call me coward and look me in the face.
There are things no man should have to see or hear.
What things? He's been hearing them ghost bells again.
Yes, I heard them last night, and they were red in the sea like blood colour.
Well, I never heard them, and I was born here. Come on, Zom.
Do you really hear those ghost bells?
Yes, I heard them. Deep down in the sea they were.
How's some a shipwreck, is it?
It's Lyonesse, the lost city in the sea.
I always thought it was an old wives' tale.
Ah, there's a city there, right enough. Thousands of years back, the sea just came and swallowed it up, and there it lies now, buried in the deep.
Why does the bell sound?
Well, we found Mr. Penrose, didn't we? There have been other bodies, too. When the bell sounds, it means death.
The fishermen gather the nets and leave the beach. In Penrose's room, Harold puts back a picture. Ben picks up books.
That's better. Now, there's just this one. Hey, where are the nails?
There's a book missing from the set here.
Oh, I shouldn't worry about that. Things are always disappearing in Tregathia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you know the old rector? Vanished about 50 years ago. Never been seen since.
You know something, Harold? You are a mine of fascinating information.
Now, it's funny you say that, because it is said that he was lost in an old tin mine. Funny you mention mines.
But what's that got to do with the missing book?
Oh, the book's unimportant. But you see, I did a sketch of Jill and put it between the pages.
Oh, really?
Where are those nails?
Well, why would anyone want to steal your sketch of Jill?
Well, Ben, modesty prevents me from saying that perhaps it was a man of great taste. Who fancied a work of art? Well, here they are.
I wonder.
Hold that, will you?
You know, all these things happening. Penrose's death. And the sketch in the book disappearing.
Yeah, it is. What about them?
Well, they're all connected. I mean, they have one thing in common, Jill.
You're a great one for mysteries, aren't you? You're just trying to frighten us. Isn't he, Herbert?
The hen's in a basket.
What's happening here? I told you, I saw this thing. I don't know what it was. It wasn't a human.
Now, Ben, you're sensible, you're intelligent, you're a man of the world, savoir-faire. Now, let's admit that anyone in the semi-darkness could mistake an intruder for something more mysterious. Now, that's possible, isn't it?
Now, listen, I'm a mining engineer, a trained observer. I look for the little things that the ordinary eye might pass over, because the slightest clue could mean a fortune to those who employ me. Now, if I say I saw something or someone that could be superhuman, I mean it.
I'm going to put on a proper pair of trousers with legs on.
He heads out.
Herbert!
Jill comes in.
Thank you for your kindness, Ben.
What are you going to do now? Stay here in England or go back to America?
I don't know. This state isn't settled yet. Well, Mr. Penrose was working on it when...
Try not to think about it.
I just can't help it.
Jill, listen to me. Now, I tell you, you are in danger. Now, all I want you to do is move someplace where there are more people.
Well, I'm not running away.
Well, you're stubborn.
Ben walks over to the window and tugs at the handles of the leaded casement.
Now what are you doing?
I'm just checking. You better leave him that way, do you hear?
Below the window, he finds a piece of bladder wrack.
Seaweed.
There you go again.
All right. I'm imagining things. That's what everybody says, so I'd better believe it.
Maybe you should.
With a pert smile, Jill turns on her heel. Ben, grinning, follows her into the corridor.
Well, I'm going up to bed now.
Good night, Jill.
Good night, Ben, and you get some rest now. Good night.
Good night.
Jill goes.
Absolutely charming. An inspiration to any artist, I'd say.
I wonder if anyone would mind if I put my feet up on the sofa for the night.
Charming. Whatever for?
To keep an eye on things.
Very wise. You'll pardon me if I turn in. I want to get plenty of sleep. I'm going to paint an entirely new canvas first thing in the morning. A sunset.
A sunset in the morning?
I'm a slow worker. Good night, old fella.
Outside, lightning forks through dark storm clouds. Waves crash onto the rocks. Water funnels into narrow channels and rock pools. Lightning flickers over the isolated guest house on top of the cliff. The house is in semi-darkness. Jill appears on the stairs, overlooking the empty hall. She's wearing a long red cloak and carrying a candle. She looks around at the gloomy room, then walks down the oak stairs. She heads down the corridor, the candle lighting her calm face with an eerie glow. Her shadow is thrown up on the wall. In her cloak, she appears almost to glide down the corridor. She reaches Penrose's room. The door's open. She steps in and tries the light switch. Nothing happens. The only light comes from her candle and a fire flickering in the grate. She reaches the window. A creature springs up and puts its hand over her mouth. It hustles her out through the bookcase door. Jill drops her candle. Ben, dozing in a neighboring room, wakes up. He steps into Penrose's room and looks about him, frowning. Hearing a noise, he hides behind the door. He grabs the legs of the intruder. The lights come on. He's rugby-tackled Harold.
Oh, it's you. I do wish you'd stop playing the giddy goat. You could have hurt me. I might never have painted again. I suppose you've some reason for skulking around behind doors. I just caught up with Herbert. He'd escaped again.
I had a feeling this sort of thing would happen. Now, whatever it was in here before, came back and took Jill. But how?
These old houses are full of sliding passages and secret thingamajigs. Leave this to me. You know what's wanted here? Brain power. Now, if there's a hidden door, there must be a concealed button somewhere. My instinct tells me to press, here.
He tries the nose of a sculpted figure supporting the mantelpiece. There. Then tries its partner. On the mantelpiece, the hen pecks at a brass and feathered ornament. The bookcase door springs open. Ben peers through into a secret passage. Harold hands him a lantern. Ben sets it on the desk and rummages in his pocket for some matches.
You going in there, Arthur? You are. You're not expecting me to go in there too, are you?
Ben nods. Harold grabs his chicken, stowing it in the lidded basket.
I warn you, Ben, I'm a little bit of a coward.
Ben climbs into the rough-hewn passage.
This is the way she was taken.
There are lines in the wet sand underfoot.
Oh, geez.
Harold follows tentatively.
There's a trail of seawater.
And quite a lot of seaweed. Marvelous place for a Chinese restaurant.
Ben holds up the lantern by a gap in the passage. It's open to the cliffs and sea below.
Let's try this way.
A fountain spouts water at the entrance to an open underground chamber. Ben and Harold eye each other nervously.
Come on.
Ben leads the way down rough stone steps over a bridge of rock. Stalagmites line the way. Harold, holding the chicken basket under his arm, follows reluctantly. At the bottom of a flight of steps, Ben hesitates.
Wait here.
Harold waits on the floor of the chamber while Ben hurries up a twisting stone staircase. He looks about him, then heads round a corner out of Harold's view. Water streams down from the ceiling of the chamber. Harold jiggles anxiously. Moments later, Ben reappears behind the outcrop of rock where Harold's waiting. Harold can't see him.
Ben? Ben?
Ben runs quietly up and puts his hand on Harold's shoulder. Harold looks at Ben and grimaces. Something catches Ben's eye. He heads over to a circular pool full of bubbling water. Ben stands on the edge of the whirlpool, staring down at the water which froths and foams. Ben steps onto a rock at the edge. It gives under his weight.
No! No!
Harold goes to help. They both fall into the water, swirling down into the depths, chicken basket and all. Bubbles rise to the surface. Two heavy doors slide shut. Ben is lying face down on the damp earth floor of a stone room. Beside him, an old iron mechanism for closing the doors. Ben comes to and slowly gets to his feet. Harold is standing behind him. The chicken, a little disheveled, is perched on top of its basket. Harold, disgruntled, brings out his handkerchief.
There's a lot to be said for ducks. Water rolls off their backs. They can swim and help a person. Not like some chickens, I know.
He pops the bird back in the basket.
What is this place?
I don't know. It looks like some sort of a water gate.
Why don't you leave that chicken behind? She'll only get in the way.
He doesn't know who's man's best friend, does he, Herbert?
Harold clucks at the chicken, then follows Ben up a stone staircase. A circular window in the rock glows fiery red. An eerie orange light illuminates the rocky path. Ben pauses at a narrow bridge across a plunging chasm.
It must lead somewhere.
Yes, and I've got a nasty feeling you want to find out where.
They cower back. Dust falls from the ceiling. Ben ventures across the bridge to the other side of the vast rocky chamber.
Everything's fine. Look, Ben, if there's going to be an earthquake, let's get off the bridge.
Halfway across, Harold sinks to his knees, covering the chicken basket with his body. The bridge shakes. Showers of small stones fall from above.
I'm not coming here for my summer holidays. Let's find out what's up ahead.
Ben, just sit here and wait for something pleasant to happen.
Watch out!
The bridge cracks. Ben grabs the basket before a section of stone plunges down into the abyss.
You almost lost your bird.
Thank you. And Herbert thanks you, don't you, Herbert? He might even lay you an egg.
Leaving the red glow of the chasm, they reach a section where the rock wall overhangs the path. A rippling watery light plays on the rough-hewn surface. Ben stops to listen.
Where's it coming from?
Harold looks round nervously.
What is it?
Ben clambers over a stone threshold into a low chamber. There's a metal door at one end. He tugs at it in vain. Beside the closed door is the entrance to a steeply sloping tunnel. Ben peers down it.
Well, what about this?
What? Down there? It's the only way.
Ben climbs in through the narrow circular entrance. Lying on his stomach, he slithers feet first. Harold puts down the chicken basket. He clambers backwards into the tunnel on all fours. Picking up the basket, he lets himself slide. Ben, then Harold, drop out of the end of the tunnel into the palm of a giant stone hand. They peer through the curved fingers into a room down below, a gallery supported by huge seated figures carved out of stone. They dwarf five men who are standing against the wall, a sixth man holding a wooden bowl opposite to each of the men in turn. Solemn-faced, each takes two pebbles. He holds the bowl out to an elderly bearded man sitting on the other side of the room. He also takes two pebbles. Standing nearby, another man, his hands tied behind him, looks on. Ben and Harold watch from their vantage point as the bowl carrier goes round again. This time, each man puts a single pebble back into the bowl. Into a clutch of black pebbles, the elder man drops a single white one. The bowl holder shows it to the prisoner, who hangs his head. The bowl holder nods at two of the men who lead the prisoner off. Ben and Harold exchange glances. The rest of the men file past, heading up a worn stone staircase that leads out of the vast room. The two guards take the prisoner down a flight of stairs and chain him to a stake. Water laps at the man's feet, soaking his stockings. When the chains are secure, the guards climb the stairs after the others. Ben puts a finger to his lips, silencing Harold. The chained prisoner stands stoically.
That we got ourselves into.
Let's see if we can help him.
Ben clambers down the wrist of the stone hand. As he and Harold jump onto the floor below, water starts to gush through the stone fingers.
Let's get that chain off him!
Ben struggles with the padlock as the water level rises, but the chain stays secure. The prisoner shouts at him.
Get out! Quickly, that way! In a few seconds, this place will be full of water! Go on!
Water gushes through the hand.
There goes Ben. We can't help him.
Go on!
What kind of people would do things like this?
Reluctantly, Ben and Harold climb the steps, abandoning the prisoner to his fate. Ben leads Harold to the upper staircase.
Let's find Jill.
They head off. The prisoner recoils from the water raining down on him from the massive hand. The seated stone figures, who have heads like cattle, are knee-deep in water. Ben and Harold walk along an upper gallery level with the carved horns of the beasts. Leaving the flooded chamber, they climb up a narrow staircase that leads into a room. From guttering flames in a double-spouted brass oil lamp. Ben peers round the room. Harold hangs back. Ben walks over to the desk scattered with books. He picks one up and frowns at the title.
Seismology by J.S. Tilton. Well, that's odd. This hasn't been through the sea. None of it has. And how did they get the oil for the lamps?
Harold picks up a piece of paper.
A sketch of Jill. How did this get here?
Ben shrugs. The two men stare at each other. Ben hurries across the room. As he frowns at a brass seismometer, the bowl carrier steps in through the doorway. Ben lunges at him and shoves him back against the wall.
Where is she? Where is she?
Harold watches, wincing. Ben knocks the man to the floor. Ben stands back against the wall. The room shudders. Debris falls from above. Harold tries to protect the chicken basket under his jacket. The tremor passes. Ben straightens. Harold clucks at his bird. A man in a gold-braided frock coat looms in the doorway.
You fight very well, young man.
He looks down at the sprawled bowl carrier.
Did you kill him? It doesn't really matter. He dislikes me. He'd like to step into my shoes. Not that he ever will. Get up! Oh, don't worry, he won't touch you, Dan. He might even teach you how to fight, if you asked him very humbly. Get up!
Dan clambers to his feet. Harold smiles politely.
now we've got that little matter settled, who do we have the... who are you, sir?
Dan answers as the man steps forward.
You be the captain.
It seems you tried to come down the passages at the wrong time. As it happens, we have a local phenomenon here that creates something of a maelstrom under certain conditions of tide and circumstance.
I see. Well, perhaps you'll be kind enough to show us the way out.
There is no way out. Not for you. And not for him.
Nor for the girl? Is she alive?
You will answer the questions, not ask them.
No way out? But you're not planning to keep us here for good?
You're right. We're not.
Why can't we go?
Because there is an outside chance that you might be of help.
Well, I'd like to help you. I mean, I'd be delighted to be of any assistance at any time. I mean, I'm only too pleased.
And if we can't help you?
Survival down here depends on usefulness.
Well, in that case, how could we help you?
The captain eyes them sternly.
Follow me.
Harold hangs back. Ben follows the captain to a window that looks out under the water. Stone shapes loom up, framed against the murky blue. A shoal of fish swim past.
Beautiful, isn't it?
What? What is it?
The city in the sea.
Lyonnais?
Perhaps. One name is as good as another.
I asked, in what way could we help you?
There it is.
He points.
Volcano. Peak is vitrified sand, which is why it's transparent. But the pressure of molten lava sealed inside of it has been building up steadily, steadily. It was the pull of that monster, the elemental power that is in it that brought you to our doorstep. I remember when it was practically dormant. But over the years, that glow has increased.
Another tremor. Everyone looks up anxiously. The room starts to shake. Fine dust showers down. Harold clasps the chicken basket more firmly.
The sharks, too. Always stronger. Yes, the end is coming. Another year, another month, another week.
Another week?
Yes, perhaps. Perhaps even sooner. Yes, you are looking at the final executioner. Time is running out. The only question now is when. You hear those pumps? They were installed by the people who built that city. A great people. So great that when the sea took their land, they built those pumps to pipe the heat from the volcano and to provide fresh air and water. And they lived down there, those people, for a while under the sea, in their palaces and towers. And then they died, almost completely, except for the gill men, the half-men, pathetic remnants of a great nation. But they're my people all the same.
Your people?
Yes. Yes, this is my world. I am their king. No, more than their king. They believe that I am death. Death looking gigantically down from my tower. And they're right, I am death. Because the means of death is in my hands, but I'm also life for the same reason.
Except for the volcano.
Yes. Except for the volcano. Tremors cease, the pumps will stop, they must. And when the pumps stop, my city will die, and so will my people. Oh, I've done my best. I've racked my brains to think of a way to fight back. Raids up above there seeking a solution. We took this many years ago. It's a seismometer, you know. It registers the tremors of the earth. But what has it shown? Only the increasing violence of the volcano growing stronger day by day. And then we've looked for books. Oh, yes, like this one. I read it last night from cover to cover. But it's less than useless. But I must save my people.
How can you?
No. We've heard of the strides that science made in this century.
What do you mean, science in this century? Look, how long have you been here?
I will ask the questions. And I cannot accept defeat. No man has a right to. Look.
He points to the window. Two gill men swim with a diver with bronze breathing apparatus.
These are my people. It's a hunting party, which my men are directing. These creatures, they help us to obtain food. Needless to say, our stipend down here is fish. Do you know how many years it has been since I have eaten beef or chicken?
Chicken?
Harold hides his basket. On the seabed, the helmeted diver primes a crossbow. He swims after a large blue fish training his harpoon on its prey. One of the gillmen with a scaly body and flowing seaweed hair swims easily up behind a fish, grabs it by the tail and wraps it gently in a net. The diver, cumbersome in his bulky helmet and breathing gear, stalks another fish. The hunter fires. His harpoon pierces the fish's side. Ben turns to the captain.
What about Penrose? We found his body.
Oh, I gave him a chance. I don't know why, perhaps because I liked him. But he was of no use, so I sent him out with one of those diving suits, and I gave him a head start. Yes, he even got as far as the golden shrine, but no further.
Because your men killed him.
I said he had his chance.
So do you have a chance. You say this is the end? Why do you stay? There's a way out of here, and you know where it is. So why don't you get out now while you can?
No.
Why not?
You'll learn the answer to that question if you live long enough.
I see. Well, to get back to the question of finding a way out
of
here.
Who are you?
Well, my name is Harold Tufnell Jones. I'm an artist. Mrs. Herbert.
Chicken.
You don't know how lucky you are. This is Benjamin Harris. Professor Benjamin Harris.
Professor.
Yes, he's a fellow of the Royal Society. Yes, he holds both the North of England and the South of England Golden Awards for Technological Achievement. He's an MA, BA, FS, CG, LMS, LNER. He's got more letters after his name. Anybody think it was the alphabet? And what he doesn't know about earthquakes and Simon is a seismonology and technological achievements is absolutely not worth knowing.
Is this true?
Of course it's true. This fellow, J.S. Tilton, he's an amateur. My friend, Ben, he's the expert, the expert, aren't you?
Can you save my city?
From the volcano.
Yes, can you stop it, tame it, kill it?
Oh, well, this is a matter for consideration, and consideration takes time, doesn't
there it? There is no time.
No time. Captain.
Ben glares at Harold as the captain walks over to a glass cylinder.
This is our tide meter. The tide will turn when the water level drops to zero. You have exactly 3 hours, Professor. Make the most of your time.
The room shudders, setting off more showers of rock. The portrait of Jill falls off the desk. The captain picks it up.
No, I'll leave it.
I did that drawing. It's not perhaps one of my best. Would you say a little too realistic, perhaps?
You're an indifferent artist, sir. The young lady is much more beautiful than this.
Then she is alive and she's here.
Yes, and you are alive too. Try to remain so.
Where is she?
Simon?
Two men step
into the grotto chamber. It will do you no good to question Simon. His tongue was cut out 60 years ago.
60 years?
Take them.
Simon is a bearded man who looks to be in his 30s. He pushes Harold roughly forward. The other man leads Ben. Both are armed with flintlock pistols. They take Ben and Harold into a rough-walled chamber. Harold stops on the threshold and listens. He turns to Simon.
Who's that whispering?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Simon silently leads them into the room. The rough ceiling is supported here and there by ornate columns carved out of the rock. Simon takes a leather-bound book from a pile and throws it down on a desk. Glowering at Harold, he walks out of the room. Harold inspects some hieroglyphic writing carved onto the wall. When Simon's out of earshot, Ben whispers.
As crazy as the captain, what do I know about volcanoes?
That's interesting. Could be Babylonian. Well, Herbert, we've had a busy day, haven't we? Not that we've accomplished much.
Harold, what do I know about volcanoes?
About as much as the captain, which is nothing at all.
I'm beginning to think you talk too much.
If I stop talking, we're dead. Do you want me to stop?
All right, I'm sorry. For 60 years, a tongue cut out 60 years ago, and yet I'd swear the man's in his early 30s.
Which suggests that the captain is lying.
I don't know. But where do they get those diving suits and those silly crossbows?
Yeah, pretty ancient, aren't they? Might have been used by Rip Van Winkle.
But quite obviously, they haven't been sleeping.
The poems of Edgar Allan Poe.
The book on the desk.
English first edition. Published in 1847. Must be worth a fortune.
Harold and Ben turn to a bookmarked page.
No rays from the holy heaven come down on the long nighttime of that town. For light from out the lurid sea streams up the turret silently, gleams up the pinnacles far and free, up domes, up spires, up kingly halls, up fanes, up Babylon-like walls, up shadowy, long-forgotten bowers, up sculptured ivy and stone flowers, up many and many a marvelous shrine, whose wreathed friezes intertwine the vial, the violet, and the vine. So blend the turrets and shadows there that all seem pendulous in air, while from a proud tower in the town, death looks gigantically down. The waves have now a redder glow. The hours are breathing faint and low. And when, amid no earthly moans, down, down, that town shall settle hence, hell rising from a thousand thrones shall do it reverence.
The end, the volcano. Hell itself. The poem's a coincidence.
And a gruesome one.
We've got to get out of here. Now, there must be a way. It could be one of those passages.
Yes, very possibly. It'd be a pity to leave here without some sort of memento or nothing valuable, just a little something.
All we'll take is Jill. But we've got to find her.
Aye, and you can. No problem about that.
You mean we're free?
As birds in a cage. Because you'll never find your way up there unless I help you.
Well, how?
Walls have ears.
Dan goes to the door and peers out.
Hear us?
Well, how can he hear us?
You're dealing with a crazy one. He'll kill us all.
All right, all right. Can you take us to Miss Tregillis? The girl?
Yes. And I can take you away from here. But I'm coming with you. And I want a free pardon. Hmm? A free pardon. You're a gentleman. Important. You can use your influence up there to get me a free pardon.
For what?
What would it be but smuggling?
Well, there are other crimes. Murder, robbery.
Smuggling, it were. You were the captain. The big man. Squire of Tregathion. He owned the manor house and all the land around for miles. He were a gentleman, but a smuggler just the same. We all worked for him. Did pretty well, too, till those excise men moved in.
Excisemen.
Aye. Couldn't keep their big noses out of it. They moved in one night. We all escaped. Upwards of 20 of us with the captain. Down the passages we went. We knew them all. Down into the sea we come. And we found the city. And we've been here ever since.
Ever since when?
Oh, that was summer of 1803.
You must be mad.
Who wouldn't be after 100 years of this?
100 years?
You don't believe me, eh?
He walks over to the pile of books lying on a stone shelf. He picks one up and brings it back to the desk. It's another large leather-bound volume.
See for yourselves. This book belonged to his wife, the captain's wife. Have a look. That'd be the captain's name, Hugh.
Hugh.
Sir Hugh, if you want the facts.
Sir Hugh.
He were a knight of the realm, and that'd be the captain's handwriting. Writ with a quill pen. See how the ink's all faded with age.
But how can you prove that it is the captain's writing?
I'll tell you how, sir. You see, it's the same letter O, the same E, and the same T. And that's no more than 8 years old. There's the pen he used that time.
A fountain pen?
Aye. Brought down here by some gent who said the likes of that had only just been invented. Well, the captain writ those words with it. And he wrote those back in 1799.
Harold steals the pen.
Is it a bargain? I can take you to the woman, and I can take you to Tregathion. But do I get my pardon up there?
There'll be no pardon for you. Not anywhere.
The
I
captain.
Knew you'd do this, Dan.
No, Captain. I was only telling them about us.
About us? Did they believe you?
100 years old.
Rather more, as it happens. It is hard to accept, is it not?
You need our help? Well, I'd say the world needs yours. You found a way to live forever.
It is a secret that we cannot pass on, sir. Now, unfortunately, it is only a local phenomenon.
I still can't believe it.
You wouldn't. We didn't believe it ourselves. Not for the first 10 or 20 years. Then we began to find out that none of us was growing any older. So we finally decided that it was a quality of the air due to an imbalance of oxygen brought on by the presence of the volcano.
He fixes Dan with a beady stare. Dan backs away.
Did you tell them where to find her, Dan?
No, Captain, I never did.
No, he didn't. He certainly didn't.
Well, it won't be necessary. I'll take you to her myself. After you've said goodbye to Dan.
Goodbye? But I never said where she was, Captain. I never told him.
Look at him. He's pathetic, isn't he? Did you really think that you could go up above there, Dan, and live? You're a fool. Or perhaps I should have told you the truth long ago.
The truth?
It has to do with actinic rays, ultraviolet rays. Down here under the sea, they become diffused and they can't harm us. But up above, up there, they would finish us.
But it ain't true, Captain. I've been up there time and again myself and many others.
Only for short periods and only at night, Dan. In the daylight, we would grow old, Dan, so fast that it would be like a worm shriveling on a hot stone in the sun. That's why we're all prisoners of our own hell, Dan.
But we're alive!
Yes, we are. And you might have been, if the professor can help us. Yes, that's right, Dan. You might have lived forever and ever. But perhaps you're lucky. Take him away.
No, Captain, no!
A shutter from the volcano cracks the writing on the wall. Part of the ceiling caves in. The captain gestures to two men who force Ben and Harold to follow, as two others hustle Dan away. Back in the study, the captain meets with Simon. Simon holds up 5 fingers, then 2.
It was the biggest.
The captain walks over to the window. It's illuminated by an orange glow from the underwater volcano. Ben glances at Harold and goes to join the captain. Harold, more hesitant, follows. Outside on the ocean bed, beside the ruins of the city, a circular hole in the Earth's crust radiates an incandescent glow.
Your pumps are still working.
Yes, but for how long? It's coming sooner than I thought.
2 gillmen flailing in the water.
Those poor creatures, they're frightened. And I said I would take you to the young lady, and I will blindfold them.
Now look, aren't you carrying this thing a little too far? Oh, well, if you insist.
My men will guide you. Nothing will happen to you yet.
I don't like the word yet.
Blindfolded, they're led out of the study. Simon and the captain follow. They reach a room dominated by a giant stone figure of a creature with curving horns. They're taken on through a stone passageway and into a small chamber. In the center, a brass oil lamp on a stand burns with 2 smoky flames. Ben and Harold are made to stand either side of the lamp. The captain gestures to the man holding Ben.
Take off his blindfold.
Ben blinks, then stares. He crouches by her, lying on the ground.
Remove his blindfold, too.
Mine?
Remove it.
Thank you.
Harold clucks at his chicken. Ben stands.
We put her to sleep. We gave her a sleeping draught.
That's the bells.
Yes, but not the bells that you're thinking of.
They only sound at the turn of the tide. Now, these are the signal for execution.
Ours?
No dance.
You killed him?
No. I simply sent him where he wanted to go. Up there, in the daylight.
The bearded old man who put the white pebble in the bowl appears.
We here? Strangers, eh?
Another tremor.
Night for your first visit. Tell me, who was the execution gong for? Was it for... No, of course not. That was 8 years ago, at least. I think it was 8. Oh, she's still asleep.
He looks at Jill.
Pretty. Very pretty. Nice girl by the look of her. Oh, there. Let me introduce myself. My name is Ives.
Ives?
The Reverend Jonathan Ives. I was rector of Trevathian, the village, you know. A nice place. Nice people.
But they say you disappeared 50 years ago.
What is it, as long as that? How time flies. Even down here.
Right, old man, you've talked enough. These two have seen enough. Blindfolds.
If you harm that girl...
Harm her? Why would I harm her? Worry about yourselves. You're to find a solution, remember? Take them!
They're hustled away. The captain puts his hand to Jill's forehead.
She's waking. Watch over her, old man.
The captain goes. Ives, a small hunched man with grey silky hair and beard, limps over as Jill starts to stir.
Take off their blindfolds. Come with me.
The men march out. The captain follows. Harold and Ben are left alone. Harold tiptoes to the door and peers out, making sure no one's on guard.
Ben.
He points to another door.
It came in this way, which means that those stairs must lead to the tower. Which way did that door lead to?
What are you up to now, Harold?
We want to escape, don't we? Dan said he'd take us out of here.
Yes, but he also said we needed his help to do it.
Of course he'd say that.
So?
So? There must be a way out of here. Let's find it.
Well, not without Jill.
No, of course, she's coming too.
How can she? I don't have the slightest idea where she is.
I have. I counted the number of steps we took and the way we turned. When we came in this way, we took 7 steps and turned to the rock, to the right. So that when we go back, we take 7 steps, and we turn to the left. And then, if we take 60 paces, there are the stairs.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Harold covers his eyes and walks.
1, 2.
Straight into a rock.
Oh, that can't be right. Now, wait a minute. I'll get it. 3, 4, 5, 6...
Ben marches after him.
Did I say right or left?
Left.
Right. Follow me, Ben.
The captain's in his study. He picks up the sketch of Jill and looks at it thoughtfully. Then he pulls back a curtain, uncovering a painting of a dark-haired young woman who looks almost identical. She's wearing an 18th-century gown. The captain looks from the sketch of Jill to the portrait of the woman.
Never leave me again. You've come back to your husband after all these years. Never leave me again. Not while I live.
7, 8, 59, 60. Down.
Harold runs into the room where Jill's sitting with Ives.
We're going to get you out of here. We're going to try.
How did you get here at all?
We'll tell you later, but first, do you remember the way they brought you down here?
It was dark, and I was struggling so much. But there were passages, and... And there was a cave, I think, and then I must have fainted. It was the last thing I remembered. There was a man, and the way he stared at me...
Then you didn't come down through the sea. Jill.
No.
Then there is a dry land route. Would you know the way?
The way out, you mean? Oh, yes, there is a way, except my memory isn't quite
what it used to be. Things seem to elude me.
Well, please try to remember.
I'll remember. Presently. I'll remember. I've noticed things seem to come and go. Oh, and did you know they killed Dan?
His mind wanders. Sometimes he knows what he's saying, but most of the time...
What's behind the altar?
It's just another room. He told me it's a dead end.
Then we'll take the other passage. I'll go first.
Well, what about Mr. Ives?
Mr. Ives, would you like to come too? I mean, perhaps you'll remember if you come as well.
No, thank you, sir, no. It's such a noisy night, and I prefer to take my ease. Poor Dan. He was so good. There's some good in everybody, don't you think?
Harold, Ben and Jill start to run.
Anyway, that's always been the precept on which I've built my life. My very long life.
Harold leads the way down the network of passages.
This one, the right one.
Jill hesitates, listening to the voices. Ben urges her on. They enter a chamber and look about them, confused. Mute Simon and a guard armed with a pistol appear from another passage. They round up Ben, Jill and Harold and take them to the captain's study. The captain barely gives them a glance.
It's quite a maze, isn't it? I should have warned you that those passages were a waste of time. So you found the young lady, hmm? One of you is brighter than I'd thought.
Harold grins.
And in that case, you're entitled to your reward. It's a pity, however, that the professor must suffer too.
Suffer?
The captain looks up. Simon. The mute pushes an iron lever on the wall, and the execution room a bell tolls.
That's your execution bell.
Yes, sir. But it has other uses as well.
What are you going to do about us?
They will make that decision.
The Gillman.
Of course. But we're expected to follow an established ritual. Don't ask me how old it is. They've been asking for a sacrifice for the volcano. Now they can have it.
What, him?
Harold points to his chicken.
But that's idiocy. Killing us won't stop the volcano.
I know that. But they don't. If a sacrifice will make them a little happier for what little time is left.
Another rockfall. Ben hugs Jill protectively. The captain steadies the oil lamp. Harold holds tight to his chicken. The juddering subsides.
Listen to your pumps. It sounds different.
Yes. Yes, I'm afraid you're right. But that doesn't alter your situation.
The captain walks to the window and holds up a storm lantern. Two Gillmen, crouching on the seabed, turn to each other and wave an acknowledgement. The captain lowers the lamp and turns back to Ben.
They have decided. You will be sent out. Just before the turn of the tide.
Why wait for the tide?
We're not murderers, sir. You will be given your chance. You will be given diving suits and a head start, just as Penrose was.
A lot of good it did him.
Yes, I agree. And I doubt if it will help you very much either.
But what chance did you give Dan?
Dan was a traitor. Your only crime was curiosity.
How will a head start help us? Will she be sent out with us, too?
No. Take her back. Oh, and by the way, do not attempt to get to her again. From now on, those passages will be guarded. All right, Simon?
Simon pushes them out. Later, he stands guarding the passage outside the room. Harold peeps round the doorway. Seeing Simon, he sighs and stomps back inside. Ben is lying on the desk, reading.
Simon's still out there, of course?
Harold nods. Jill appears in the doorway, followed by Ives.
Shh, be quiet. Everything above a whisper can be heard.
What, in here?
Yes, here. He told me. He's all right now. He knows what he's saying.
Yeah, I do indeed. You must have heard them whispering. Do you think they can't hear you?
How?
They have some sort of listening tubes, so whisper.
How did you get here? There's a guard out there.
There was a guard.
You remember the way? The way they brought Jill down here?
Yes, of course I do, but there's no use now. That route is only clear of seawater for a few minutes every day. You have to wait 18 hours.
18 hours?
Your only chance of escape is at the turn of the tide.
But they're sending us out any minute.
So the young lady told me.
Out there?
You'll have to, because you won't stand a chance once the guards are on your trail.
You mean you want us to go now?
You must reach the Golden Shrine at the turn of the tide. It's nearly half a mile away. A cave under the cliff just to the right of the volcano.
Yes, but how do we get there?
There's some diving suits in the Watergate chamber. That must be the way you came in.
Oh, he's right, we did.
It's dangerous, I know, but if you stay here, you'll die anyway, so what can you lose?
Harold gives a look of despair.
So, you'll go down to the Watergate chamber, the three of you. You'll put on the diving suits. They're clumsy and difficult to handle, but you'll soon get used to them. And the lock gate control winch is on the right. It's rusting, but it works. But once you're on the sea, the glare from the volcano will guide you. Now follow the glare till you're past the crater. And the shrine is above water level at the turn of the tide. And there's a pathway that leads up to Tregathion.
Well, if the volcano isn't active now, then how can it guide us?
Well, that's just something you'll have to accept.
But what about the guards on the way down to the water gate?
There'll be no guards once the alarm sounds.
Alarm?
The execution gong. It's also the alarm signal. Once the alarm sounds, any guards that are on the stairway will come rushing down the passage to make sure that you're here. But you'll fool them by going up to the tower room and going down the stairway from there. And nobody will hear you, not above the sound of the gong.
But who'll be in the tower room?
Only me, sounding the alarm. The captain will have gone to his room. All right. Well, now I'm going up to the tower. Now remember, once you hear the gong, join me immediately.
Can't you come with us?
Thank you. No, I'm too old and too tired. Well, there is one point. There's no need for you to take a chance, because I happen to know why you were brought here. It was because of a sketch found in a stolen book. I was with the captain when he came upon it. I've never seen a man so moved. He ordered them to bring you down here. He was like a man possessed. But you can stay. Nobody is going to hurt you.
Jill shakes her head and glances at her companions.
Good luck to you. Give me 2 minutes.
The old man picks his way over Simon's body lying in the corridor.
Oh, boy. I'm really sorry.
Harold opens the lid of the chicken basket and strokes the bird.
Don't worry, Herbert. I'll get you home in time for tea.
Ives steps into the captain's study to look at the tide gauge. He stands back against the wall as the room is rocked by a tremor. As it eases, he steps over to the iron lever and, pushing it slowly, sounds the alarm. Ben grabs Jill.
Come on.
Harold shuts the basket and hurries out after them. Ben, Jill and Harold run into the study.
Wait, on your way!
Jill sees the painting.
Who is that?
Now come along, hurry, please.
That's a picture of me.
No, that portrait's over 100 years old. Now go!
It's me.
Jill, go, I said. The tide won't wait for you. He's right, we've got to get out. Ben, come on, hurry.
Ben drags her away. The painting falls as the ceiling caves in. Ben leads the others to the water gates. In a side room is a collection of diving suits and helmets. Ben grabs one.
Try or die.
The captain and two guards find Simon's body in the passageway. Two more guards emerge from Ben and Harold's room. The captain hurries over to them.
There's men there.
They're gone, Captain.
He turns back, picking his way over fallen rocks and boulders. By the water gates, Jill, Harold and Ben put on their diving suits, then winch the gates open. The captain searches for them.
Escape. They must not escape.
If we get into the sea, which way do we turn? There's no light from the volcano.
Put on your helmets.
It'll show through. Keep your eyes on me and stay close.
Ben puts on his metal helmet. There's a small rectangular window in the front. A decorative bronze fish makes a ridge down the back. Jill and Harold, similarly dressed, step through the gates. Ben winches them shut. The chicken basket has been left behind. The divers step down into the water. In the study, Ives gazes absently as the captain looms over him.
Where is she? Where are those men?
Woman, pleasant enough person.
Where is she? Where is she? You told them how to escape.
It was only fair. It was only fair.
You men, go ahead of me. Find them. Follow them.
The three are underwater. Slowly they drift down to the seabed. They start to walk forward, bubbles rising from their helmets. The window in Ben's helmet frames his anxious face. He turns to his companions, beckoning them to follow. Jill's eyes are curious. Harold frowns. The chicken is sharing his helmet, nestling snugly against Harold's right cheek. The captain runs down the steps into the locker room.
You men, quickly! Arm yourselves with those crossbows!
Ben, Jill and Harold continue their slow progress over the ocean floor as the captain's men, kitted out in diving suits, grab crossbows from a cupboard. Six armed men make their way down the stone steps into the water. Ben, leading his friends, turns to them and gestures. The chicken has swapped sides to nestle against Harold's left cheek. Ben waves his hand to signal no and points in another direction. Harold shrugs. Jill looks from one to the other. The two men come either side of her and guide her in the direction Ben was pointing. Lurking behind some undersea boulders is the captain. He's armed with a knife. Waving the glinting blade, he leads his men who advance behind him carrying their bronze crossbows. Bubbles stream from the metal scales of the fish flexed along the center line of each helmet. As though in slow motion, the captain runs through the watery deeps. His men pick their way over the barnacle rocks and outcrops of coral. The captain frowns and looks through the murky water. He turns and halts his men. They stand in a semicircle. He gestures, and one acknowledges him and leads the way. Ben turns to his companions. He beckons them onwards. Harold indicates the other way. Jill turns from one to the other as they argue in a slow, halting sign language. Harold glances at his chicken and chuckles. The three decide on a direction and move off. Skimming the ocean bed, a gill man swims nearby. He glides behind a sandbank and watches. He has pallid skin, small features, and gill slits on his cheeks. A narrow mane of seaweed hair trails from his otherwise bald head. He's clothed in seaweed rags. His feet end in shaggy seaweed flippers. He skulks away, keeping close to the ocean floor, gliding quickly and easily through the water. He swims up to the captain, who greets him warmly. The gill man points and swims away. The captain, waving his knife, gestures to his men. The captain swims up to a rock. He peers through the murky water and grins. His men, armed with their crossbows, swim up to join him. The captain leads the way. Ben, Jill and Harold exchange anxious glances. In their cumbersome suits, they struggle over the seabed. The captain forges ahead, his men following. The men, half swimming, half walking, make their way swiftly over the rocks and coral, pursuing Ben, Harold and Jill. The men load their harpoons and prime their bows. One after another, they shoot. The harpoons speed through the water, narrowly missing their targets. Ben, Jill and Harold try to run. Two gillmen swim towards them, gliding up on the three, who are indistinguishable in their heavy diving suits. Two of the three are attacked by gillmen. The gillmen swim up behind them and try to pull off their helmets. They wrestle wildly, fighting them off. The third diver picks up a rock from the seabed. As the others tussle, the diver bashes the rock onto the head of a gillman. The gillman loses his grip and is beaten off, clubbed with a rock, again and again. The divers congratulate each other, but the captain's men are on their way. The captain turns and gestures to his men to spread out. Ben, with a look of determination, follows his companions. A gillman swims stealthily up behind him and makes a grab for Ben's helmet. They tussle. Ben is wrestled to the ground. Harold turns and sees what's happening. His eyes widen in alarm. The gillman has Ben pinned to the seabed. Harold swims over and pulls the gillman off. He punches him in the face. Cuffed again, the gillman swims away. Harold and Ben clap each other on the shoulders. They beckon to Jill and head off again. Harold grins as the chicken ruffles its feathers against Harold's cheek. The captain appears behind a fan-like clump of seaweed. He flaunts his knife. His men, crossbows raised, swim on. Some, holding spare harpoons, they stalk their prey. Hand in hand, Harold and Jill follow Ben. He gives a determined grin. The chicken is still perched on Harold's shoulder. Suddenly, Ben's eyes widen. He points frantically. A man with a crossbow is approaching. The three join hands and scamper frantically over the rocky ocean floor. The captain scans the watery horizon. Ben is high up on an outcrop of coral. He sees a hunter down below. As the hunter climbs the outcrop, Ben swims above him, then plunges down. He wrestles with the hunter in a tangle of limbs and bubbles. They struggle over the crossbow. Ben frees the weapon from the man's grip and tosses it aside. He tries to unfasten the man's visor. Bubbles scream and the man somersaults down towards the seabed. Ben tries to swim off, but his leg is caught in a crevice in the rock. The dark form of another hunter appears above him. Ben struggles to free himself. The hunter aims his crossbow. As Ben's friends come to help him, harpoons whip through the water. Ben's leg is pulled clear. The friends scamper away, kicking up a cloud of sand that hangs suspended in the water. They arrive back where they started, emerging up the watery steps one by one. Ben waits by the water gates as Jill is guided up into the stone chamber. She slips. Harold helps her and they hurry through the heavy wooden doors. Ben winches the doors shut. Underwater, the captain and his men are in pursuit. Out of the diving suits, Ben, Harold and Jill run through the execution room. as the captain and his men emerge up the watery stone steps. The captain stands by the closed wooden water gates and turns to his men.
Come on! Come on! Hurry up! There's no time to lose!
One man winches the doors open. As Ben and Jill run through the execution room, Harold's chicken escapes from under his arm.
I'll be back. Herbert, come here. Herbert, don't be...
Harold!
It squeezes through a crack in the wall at the base of the giant seated figures. Ben runs back. The volcano glows brighter. Rocks tumble down into the room. A giant stone figure tips forwards. The block of stone it's supporting topples down. Columns collapse right where Jill, Harold, and the chicken are crouching. Ben cowers against the wall on the other side of the room. As the tremor subsides, he climbs over the fallen masonry. He looks frantically for his friends, who are hemmed in by debris.
Jill?
He's out there. He's all right.
Yes, but we're in here, and we're all wrong.
To the chicken.
Stand there, dig!
A bullet ricochets off the stone near Ben. He runs to hide. The captain's arrived with two of his men. The captain beckons. The two armed guards venture warily into the middle of the room. They look around at the massive stone figures. Ben, concealed behind one, tries to calm his breathing. One of the guards steps into the shadowy space where Ben is hiding. Ben wraps his arms around the man's throat and squeezes. The man drops his gun and sinks to the ground. The captain listens anxiously. Ben sidles past another stone figure and spies on the second guard. He waits, then leaps out as the man comes towards him. The man's gun goes off. Ben knocks him down. The captain picks up the other guard's gun and turns to face Ben as the room rocks around them. The captain aims wildly. The giant stone hand gives way, plunging down onto the captain. Ben watches aghast, then hurries to help his friends, trying to dislodge a block of masonry. The hand has landed with its fingers down, making a kind of cage over the captain. Hidden beneath it, the captain clutches his shoulder, then collapses onto his back. As Ben struggles to move rocks on the other side of the room, the captain watches through the gaps in the massive fingers. The captain calls to Ben.
Come back! Don't leave me!
Ben ignores him.
This place will be underwater in minutes!
Ben clears a gap in the rubble. Harold passes the chicken through.
You can't get out of here by yourselves! I can help you!
Ben helps Jill climb out through the gap.
Careful.
As she emerges, the captain stares.
Beatrice, listen to me. Tell them that we found each other. Beatrice, make them help me so that I can save you.
The volcano erupts. A river of lava flows over the seabed and forces its way through the walls.
The passageway, to the left.
Come on, we can't help them. It's even too late for us.
Ben grabs Jill's hand. Harold races after them. The captain struggles in his stone cage as lava gushes through the fractured rock. Ben stops at a tunnel entrance. Behind them, the room is filling with molten rock. Ben searches desperately for a way out. He clambers up one of the seated stone figures. Harold stuffs the chicken in his pocket and climbs up after Ben. The volcano belches fire as they hurry along the gallery behind the horned heads of the figures. Jill looks back, watching the walls cave in. Jill hurries on. They make it out of the execution room as red-hot lava oozes down towards the giant stone hand. In the locker room, they put on diving gear. They help each other with the breathing apparatus, and each takes a crossbow. They sway as the room shudders and water seeps through the cracking walls. They hurry through the water gate and down the stone steps as rocks tumble around them. They make their way cautiously underwater. Back in the pump room, pipes burst. In the execution room, stone figures topple. The whole edifice comes crashing down. Underwater debris strikes the three divers. In the execution room, one of the fingers of the giant hand breaks off. The captain, freed, struggles to get out. He clambers up and away from the lava flooding the floor below him. Under the ocean, the three friends make their way across the rocks and coral. Two gill men come swimming up behind them. One of the gill men is carrying a net. The friends lumber on unaware. The two gill men gesture to each other and follow. The friends are armed with crossbows. One stops to fiddle with his as the gill men swim silently up behind him. A gillman grabs him, the other swims to a companion. The gillmen struggle and wrench the weapons from the diver's hands. The third diver grabs an abandoned weapon and aims. A gillman is shot in the back. He twists and twitches. The other gillman is still wrestling with a diver. The third diver aims again. Blood spews from the gillman's guts. The divers swim free, struggling to hurry in their cumbersome equipment. The captain hurries along a passageway lit by a fiery volcanic glow. Underwater, the friends lumber on. The captain reaches a tunnel with steps that lead up into the open air. Clutching his injury, he hauls himself up towards the daylight. The divers have reached the shallows. They lift their heads above the surface. In the tunnel, the captain hauls himself up the steps. Waves lap the base of the cliffs. The three friends wade out of the sea as the captain nears the top of the steps. In their helmets and diving suits, the friends look like curious sea creatures. The captain staggers up the steps into the sunlight, collapsing before he reaches the top. He stretches out an arm in despair, then leans back, limp, against the rock. His face wrinkles more with each passing moment. His skin becomes grey and papery, his cheeks sunken, as he ages in an instant.
Some more happy clime shall give his undivided time.
Out of their diving suits, Ben, Jill and Harold pick their way along the clifftop. They look out to sea as plumes of fire and ash spout up out of the water. Jill and Ben recoil with the blast. Dazed, Harold clutches his chicken as the sea turns to fire. ITFC audio description by Louise Fryer was read by James O'Hara.
Well, who were the first men in the moon sci-fi adventure tomorrow afternoon from 1 o'clock on Channel 4? Next today, we do Tie in Come Dine With Me.